Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Hi y'all, Mario of Borderly here, and I just want to thank you once again for joining us on this journey that we've been on. I'm back today for one more episode, perhaps more of a reflection of this project, why I wanted to bring it to life, and what the El Paso Juarez border means to me, and maybe where we go from here. But I thought I'd begin with just a couple of quick anecdotes about my own life that I think symbolize why the border is so important to me. Back in 2016, I proposed to my now wife at a parking lot at the University of Texas at El Paso. I know what you're thinking, a parking lot, very romantic. But for me, it was meaningful because if you are familiar with UTEP and its location within the city, it's at the foothills of the Franklin Mountains, but it's surrounded by hills, and some of our parking lots actually give you a beautiful view of Mexico. So this parking lot in particular sits on top of a hill that you can stand in Texas and look across the highway and see Ciudad Juarez. And I don't mean that abstractly. I mean, you can literally see people's homes. You can see the names of different businesses in the city. You can see cars going up and down the streets and the highways. And it was meaningful to me and to us, I hope. At that time, my wife was a DACA recipient. She came to the U.S. when she was around 4 or 5, much like I did, except for her. She grew up in the U.S. undocumented. That's actually how we met. It was through our advocacy work. I'd met so many DACA recipients during my time at United We Dream. And it was during that time that I became a member or a part of the broader immigrant rights movement. And I had heard stories like my wife's, along countless others, and as I heard them, the border felt more and more arbitrary, much more like a lottery. And I remember clearly when I first showed my wife around El Paso. It felt absurd to me how easily I could walk into Ciudad Juarez and come right back. Yet for my wife, who at that point had been in the country more than 20 years, it was not possible. I think at the time my proposal felt almost like a promise that what we were overlooking at that time, crossing that river, that line, would one day be possible for us, for her to visit her homeland. And that was my promise to her at that time. So now, fast forward to early 2024, and our story finally let us cross that border together. Once we married in November of 2016, we began the process of adjusting Angie status. And boy, was it a process. It required an incredible amount of paperwork, pictures, and affidavits from friends and family proving that our marriage was in fact real. And then COVID hit. Our case came to a screeching halt. DHS and USCIS stopped taking applications for a good while, and even once they resumed, the wait for processing applications like ours grew and grew, and our process continued to be extended. And it wasn't until November 2023, after nearly 7 years from starting the process to adjust her status, we received in the mail a letter from the National Visa Center that my wife's case was now ready for its final part of the process. It would be her visa interview, and it would be at the U.S. consulate in none other than Ciudad Juarez. And we knew that it would take us there, but the process had taken so long that you just never really knew when the process would end. But now we had our date set. Our interview was scheduled for late January of 2024. And I remember flying into El Paso, staying one night with my folks. We were still living in Austin at the time. And then we prepared ourselves that day before to cross into Juarez, fully expecting to be there for at least a week and a half, potentially more if things ended up getting dragged out a little bit. But it felt fitting also that after so many years and so much paperwork and so much life lived, we'd have a daughter in January of 2021, that we were now in this final step of the process that would allow for Angie to cross the border, this time back to Mexico, without then really a guarantee that her case would be accepted and that she'd be allowed to return into the country. I know of many mixed status couples who unfortunately were not able to come back and have had 10-year bars placed on one of their abilities to return to the country. So we understand going in that it's not a fair process, but I remember it vividly. We crossed the border into Juarez with my dad. He drove us there, and our daughter was with us, who was about to turn 3 in a couple of days, and we drove through the streets of Juarez, streets that were vaguely familiar to me but new to my wife, and the process was intense. I'll never forget my wife, now in the last step of the process after having to go to the consulate and to a clinic 3 or 4 days, and now we were in this final process where she would submit the last of her paperwork and hope then that the consulate would accept the application and stamp her passport, making her a green card holder and allowing her to return to the U.S. legally. She explained to me I was not allowed to be there with her. She had to go in by herself, as anyone else does who is in that phase of the process. And she mentioned that there was a large room that had consular officials calling people up to finish the same process that my wife was finishing and making their cases to stay in the U.S., but some of them being denied, and her hearing the cries of agony and pain that people were going through. And I think for me, it solidified just how cruel our systems can be and brought back the theme to me on how our border, this one in particular, separates instead of bringing people together. So it was hard to hear that. And I think for us, it still feels surreal to this day, but it meant that it was finally the end of Angie's immigration case. More than 20 years later, after coming here undocumented and being a DACA recipient for more than 10 years, my wife on that day became a legal permanent resident of the United States. And that all happened in Ciudad Juarez, right across where I grew up.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. Struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites? Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. Your post jumps to the top of search results, reaching the candidates you need. Plus, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. Speed up your hiring today with a £100 sponsored job credit at indeed.com/SPANUK. Terms and conditions apply.
The drive back across was even more surreal. We were both nervous. It's a crossing that I'd done countless times, as I've shared here on this podcast, but it was my wife's first time and she had to get out of the car as we approached the customs officers. I had to keep going, and then I had to go park, and she finally came out the other side, and she was allowed to legally come into the country. And, you know, I still think about it, and I get emotional, and all of that happened here at the border, where it's everything all the time. I think Patrick mentioned it beautifully in our conversation, and it's a place of hope. It's a place of belonging. It's a place of welcoming, but it's also a place of cruelty and myths and misconceptions. So for those of us who grew up here, it's everything all the time. And it's just surreal to have had that experience happen here of all places. But I think as for Borderly and where we go from here, once I finished my initial conversation with Dr. Leyva, I realized fairly quickly that this project of mine wasn't really about explaining the border. It's truly an impossible task. We are too many things all the time to narrow it down into 4 episodes. But what I did hope was that if I asked the right questions, if I threaded things together carefully enough, I could help make sense of it. But pretty quickly, I understood that the border doesn't really want to be explained. It wants to be lived in. It wants to be listened to. The border isn't simply a line on a map. I think for those of us who live in places like El Paso and Ciudad Juarez, the border feels more like a rhythm, something that you move through, something that shows up in small, ordinary ways, and then suddenly in very heavy ones. And I think what really struck me across the conversations that I had is how differently the border exists depending on who you're speaking with. For some people, it's the history that resonates. For others, it's more the art. For others, it's the family or belonging or loss or survival. And none of those versions cancel each other out. I think they sit on top of each other, sometimes uncomfortably. And one of the biggest shifts for me during this series was realizing how much of my job, and need I remind you that this is my first real foray into podcasting at this level or this level of storytelling, is that my job was to try to get out of the way more than anything, to not try so hard to steer conversations one way or another, but just letting the conversations go where they end up and listening to our incredible participants just share their stories. And I know that listening sounds simple, but it's not, at least not for me really, especially on a topic like the border, which so many people feel an opinion about, even if they don't live here or even if they are not from here. There is this tendency to reduce the border, to flatten it into something that it's not, so that it's easier to argue about. So I think sitting back and letting people finish their thoughts, at least for me, felt in its own very small way like a form of resistance. And I'll be honest as well, I think this project has changed me. It's sharpened some of the ways that I view the border, and I think it's certainly made me more aware of assumptions that I carry that maybe I didn't even realize I had. And I feel it's made me more responsible, and not less, for how these stories are held and shared, and I hope I've done them justice. I don't feel like our series is finished, even if these first 4 episodes are. And as I said when I began Borderly, that borders are all around us, regardless of where in the world you might live. Maybe you are a border resident somewhere between France and Germany, or maybe somewhere between Pakistan and India, and I can assure you that your experiences are different to mine, but they're all worth exploring. I don't think borders are stories that have endings, and I certainly don't think that Borderly is or was ever meant to tie anything up neatly. I think that's especially true at a time like today. I'd be remiss as an immigrant, as a husband, and a dad, to not mention the reality that immigrants are facing across the United States. We have seen such an increase in violent immigration enforcement that just this month has led to the killings of two Americans on the streets of Minnesota, and not to mention immigrants who have died in ICE custody here in El Paso, along many others across the country. I think these conversations that we're having on identity, on belonging, on what it means to welcome, are more important than ever. And I hope, if nothing else, Borderly encourages you to explore those meanings in your own life and to meet with people that you normally wouldn't meet and to listen to their stories.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next time.
Mom!
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
If anything, I hope this project encourages more listening, slower listening, more intentional listening, especially to the places and the people that we think we already understand. Not sure where Borderly goes from here, but wherever that might be, I hope that I'm here with you again soon. Borderly has been a project of Immigrantly. This episode was written by me, Mario Carrillo, produced by Saria Han, editorial review by Shea Yu, sound designer and editor is Lou Raskin, additional music by Epidemic Sound, and a sincere and deep thank you to the Immigrantly team for believing in this project. Thank you so much. I'm eternally grateful.